and a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap that follow or subscribe button, and take a new program with you each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. Well, we are now in what is typically the peak of the Atlantic hurricane season, even though the Atlantic hurricane season runs all the way from June to the end of November. There is typically a peak of the season, and that is when you get into the warmest activity, the warmest part of the season. And as we look at some of the data out from the National Hurricane Center on that, you can see that this peak is between about August and November, with the highest peak of the season being towards the middle of September. So we are at the part of the graph now where we are trending upwards towards that highest peak of the season. And with that, we do have some tropical activity that we are keeping an eye on this morning. This is still very far out. You've probably seen a lot of commentary online about it. That's why I'm talking about and bringing it up this morning. It's still very far away, still a lot of uncertainty, but I'm seeing a lot of social media chatter, a lot of fear mongering, a lot of ridiculous posts on social media. So this is what we've got cooking this morning, at least from the National Hurricane Center. This is the latest that they've got on a tropical wave off the coast of Africa. Its name is, it doesn't have a name yet, but it is being known as tracked as Invest 97L. And reading directly from the National Hurricane Center website, they say showers and thunderstorms continue to show signs of organization in association with a well-defined low-pressure area located near the northwest Cabo Verde Islands. This system will likely become a tropical depression within the next day or so while it moves generally westward. Locally, heavy rain and gusty winds are expected to continue today across some of those islands, and the interest there should monitor the progress of this system. One of the things to point out is that the National Hurricane Center gives this storm system a 70% chance of development over the next 48 hours and a 90% chance of development over the next 7 days. So in all likelihood, we are seeing a very high confidence from the National Hurricane Center that something will form in this area. And as this progresses and treks westward, that is what we are looking at this morning. And that's what we are going to keep an eye on, is this is the area where we see a lot of these African waves get started, this development begin. And of course, these storms trek to the west. And then, of course, we look at threats to the continental United States. So as we come on the air this morning and look at what is expected with this storm, something that at this point would be almost 2 weeks away with the forecasting, and that's what makes it such a tough thing to obviously predict and look at this far out, because it is something that is incredibly far away. But because there's so much conversation going on about it, especially on, I've seen it on a lot of Facebook pages, a lot of Facebook groups here locally over the weekend, some posts about, oh, we'll get prepared for a hurricane sometime in the next 2 weeks. We're way, way, way far out from that. Here is what we're looking at with some modeling this morning. This is a plethora of models that are all showing this storm continuing its trek westward, south of the 20 degree latitude mark, and it shows this storm beginning to curve before it makes its way to the United States. Now, looking at some of the more detail on those particular models, here's the most recent GFS. This is the what is known as the American model, the GFS model, which is operated by NOAA here, the Global Forecasting System. And this is what it is showing as we put it in motion. You can see this low pressure area continuing to move westward as it goes just north of the Lesser Antilles, before it begins this process of curving out to sea. This is due to a high pressure system that is set up in front of the storm. And with this, it skirts a couple hundred miles off the coast of North Carolina, heads its way out to sea, and kind of falls apart as it begins that westward or that eastward spin. Again, as it moves towards the U.S., it does what is called a recurve and heads its way out to sea. But again, we are very, very far out with this storm. As I pause it, as it gets kind of closest to North Carolina, pausing it right there, this would be valid next Wednesday, August the 20th. So you're talking about a storm that at this point in time is still more than a week and a half away from even being close enough to the United States where there could even be any problems. So way far out in the forecast, 210 hours from this run of the GFS. So that's what the GFS is showing, which I'll note has been a pretty terrible forecasting model thus far this hurricane season. The Euro has been a little bit better as we put that in motion. This is the most recent run of the European model, and it shows a similar situation. You can see the storm off the African coast, and as it begins to move its way west, and as it begins to strengthen, stronger storms always tend to go north and east. We see a similar situation on the European model. You can see the pressure continuing to drop as the storm does continue to develop and form. And you see a similar situation unfolding here as well. It gets a little bit closer to the coast, but same situation, recurves and ends up moving its way away from the United States and then falling apart and no longer being a tropical system. It would be considered a post-tropical depression at that point. So that is what those two models are showing as of right now. That is what a lot of the consensus is looking at, as a storm gaining strength, moving towards the United States, but being pushed out by a high pressure system and causing it to recurve and push its way out to sea. And at least from these two main models that we're looking at this morning, not showing an immediate risk or an immediate threat to the United States. But again, you're talking about something that would not be in our area until next Wednesday or Thursday. So you're talking about a significant amount of time in the world of weather forecasting. And so that's, you know, that's a hard it's a hard thing to look at this far out. As we look at the storm this morning, you can see in the infrared satellite view this morning, it is definitely continuing to go. It has gone through this spurt over the last couple of days. The darker colors are the heavier storm, and it has lost a little bit of its power this morning as it continues to trek westward after passing over the Cabo Verde Islands over the last couple of hours and through the overnight hours. So that is going to have an impact, and really what it's going to come down to is how strong is the storm as it continues to go west. Without getting into too much crazy information and detail on it, but just a little bit, if a storm remains weaker as it moves west, it can move further west. The stronger a storm gets, it wants to push to the north and to the east. It wants to do that recurve action like we saw on both the European and the American weather models that we just looked at. So if this storm continues to trek west before it gets organized, that to me would open up the door for the possibility of some impacts here in the United States. If this storm really picks up gear and forms in the next 24 or 48 hours and starts strengthening rapidly, the likelihood of some impact here in the United States would probably be low. It's important to note that when you talk about weather forecasting, and this is why I've been so frustrated with what I've seen over the weekend, there's no certains. There's no guarantees. I mean, just go back to Hurricane Florence, which I'll note, and there's no direct correlation, but Hurricane Florence looked very similar at this point in time in its development. It looked like all of the models showed it going offshore, following a similar path to what we ended up looking at. And then, of course, we know what happened as it made its way towards North Carolina. But even with Florence, that was a Category 3 storm just off the coast of North Carolina, and it weakened dramatically before it got to the coast, and only, and I say only, but only ended up being a Category 1 storm. And all of that happened within the span of about 12 to 18 hours. So things can happen incredibly quickly. Things can change dramatically as we look at the process and how this is set to potentially unfold. Regardless of whether it ends up impacting the United States or not, the weather modeling does show that this is likely to be the strongest storm of the year thus far. Many weather models have it in the middle to high Category 2, even Category 3 range, showing this gaining some significant strength. So I bring all of this information to you this morning to say a couple of things. And if you read and you're a subscriber of the Morning Line email that I send out at 6:30 every morning, while it is not immediately clear whether this is going to affect the coastal North Carolina, South Carolina, or really even the continental United States at all, as we look at this chart and look at the likelihood of the Atlantic hurricane season, as we get deeper into August through the month of September and into the beginning of October, if you've not already gone through the process of making sure that you've got your hurricane kit ready to go, that your generator is gassed up, oil changed, whatever needs to be done on that, making sure that that's ready to go for the hurricane season, that you've got your non-perishable food and your water supply. If you don't already have that prepared right now and throughout the rest of this week, is probably a good time to do that. Are we guaranteed to have a tropical storm or hurricane? No. Well, we've already had one so far this year, but are we guaranteed to get a big storm? No. Is there a likelihood that we see a storm? Absolutely. Right? You look at a map of North Carolina, it juts right out into the Atlantic. And as we get into the peak of that season of what is expected to be a slightly above average Atlantic hurricane season, there is a likelihood, not a guarantee, but a likelihood that we will deal with some sort of tropical storm, some sort of tropical event as we continue to head through August, September, and October. So making sure that you're prepared for that. I'll be keeping a very close eye on this storm over the next couple of days, as really it will be probably the next 3 or 4 days where we will have a much better idea, a much better look as to whether this thing will actually impact the United States or not. Looking at some of the ensemble models for both the GFS and the Euro, they both show a very similar picture to what we were just looking at, showing some sort of recurve around 25 degrees north, 65 degrees west, and moving that storm out to sea. You can see a couple of outliers do bring it further to the west. Still nothing immediately impacting the United States. That's the GFS. Similar situation with the Euro. The only thing I'll note here, there are more of these model ensembles that bring this storm further west. So that is something to, again, keep an eye on. And when you're looking at a storm that is, you know, at this case, more than a week and a half away, you're not looking at the immediate track. You're looking at trends. Are the models trending east, west, north? What do those trend lines look like? As most of these major models run 4 times a day. So what we've seen over the last probably 2 days or so is a little bit more movement to the west. We've definitely seen that, but nothing so dramatic that folks across the Florida coast, the South Carolina or North Carolina coast, nobody should be bunkering down this morning. Again, we're a week and a half away from the possibility of this storm being on our doorstep, if it were to even get that far. But really, I'd say probably the next 48 to 72 hours are probably going to be pretty important. And by about a week or so out, we'll have a pretty good idea. Again, nothing guaranteed, nothing certain, nothing 100% set in stone. But we'll have a pretty good idea probably by Wednesday or Thursday of this week whether this trek, northward hook actually is going to come to fruition, or if we have to start monitoring the possibility of this storm impacting the North Carolina coast. So we'll be checking in on this every single day for the next couple of days as we watch these trends continue. for the sake here of southeastern North Carolina, hoping that it trends to the north and east and does not affect the coast here. But, you know, hoping and wishing doesn't do you a whole hell of a lot of good if you've got a major storm bearing down on you. So that's the latest that we're tracking this morning. Great resource if you're interested in getting some more information. A great website by a guy named Mike. He operates out of, I believe he's out of Western Florida. His website is spaghettimodels.com. Mike's weather page does a phenomenal job walking through all of this information. Great links and information to all of the different sources of data that we're talking about this morning. All of that available over at his website, spaghettimodels.com. We'll be checking in on this storm over the next couple of days as, again, heading into the peak of the Atlantic hurricane season. Got a lot expected to be going on across the U.S. today. President Donald Trump set to hold a press conference at 10 o'clock this morning dealing with Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, our nation's capital. The president posting this on his Truth Social platform yesterday, quote, "We're having a news conference tomorrow in the White House. I'm going to make our capital safer and more beautiful than it ever was before. The homeless have to move out immediately. We will give you places to stay, but far from the Capitol. The criminals, you don't have to move out. We're going to put you in jail where you belong. It's all going to happen very fast, just like the border. We went from millions pouring in to zero in the last few months. This will be easier. Be prepared. There will be no more Mr. Nice Guy." Nice little hat tip there to Alice Cooper. "We want our capital back. Thank you for your attention to this matter." That's the president's new line that seems to be getting some pretty good traction. Thank you for your attention to this matter. A news conference, I believe I saw the Chiron over on Fox earlier around 10 o'clock this morning, as there's some rumors, some speculation that he is going to instruct leadership within the District of Columbia to clean up their act. You know, we've seen a lot of bloodshed, a lot of dangerous situations unfolding in Washington, D.C. over the last 6 months. And, you know, he talks about the homeless population in D.C. and that, you know, works into what we were talking about last week here on the show. We had that very, what I'll call disappointing Wilmington City Council meeting early last week, when you had the Democrat majority on the council kick the can down the road once again on the homeless population, saying, oh, you know, we'll deal with it in September. You had Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell and Charlie Rivenbark being the only two individuals that have any sort of common sense or wanting to make any sort of salient arguments on the dais over homeless. And as I stated last week, as it related to southeastern North Carolina, this is not just a Wilmington issue. Homelessness is a problem all over the United States. Homelessness or they don't even call it that anymore. They call it the unsheltered is the politically correct term to use for God knows whatever reason. It's offensive to call somebody homeless, but it's not offensive to call them unsheltered, just more liberal garbage and nonsense. This is an ongoing problem all over the country. And it comes back to something that is, I think, really hard for those on the political left to wrap their head around. You can give individuals access. And it's the key word is access. You can give them access to the best services possible. You can give them access to rehab services. You can give them access to faith-based rehabilitation. Hell, you can even put a shelter over their head and put food in their stomach. You can do all of those things and give them access to those services. But one thing that we know for certain that you cannot do is force individuals who are unwilling or uninterested in getting help, that are uninterested or disinterested in changing their lives, that are unwilling to make a change, you can't force them to take advantage of those services. And that, to me, is one of the things that I find so frustrating about this discussion of homelessness here in southeastern North Carolina or anywhere across the country, is the services are available. here in Wilmington, using that as the example, followed up on our conversation last week, the county, the city, citizens of our community invest their time, treasure, and talent into making those services available. The city and the county and the endowment invest tens, if not hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars a year into various groups like Coastal Horizons and all of these other charities, some faith-based, some not faith-based, that provide individuals access to clean up their lives, provide them the ability to make a change. But what you can't do in America, because we are a free country after all, is you cannot compel somebody to take advantage of the services that are offered. You've heard the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, you can't force it to drink. It's the same thing with the homeless population. You can invest the money into detox shelters. You can invest the money into food, and you can invest into all of these different services and facilities and programs. But if somebody is truly not interested in changing their lifestyle, if somebody is truly satisfied living the life that they are, and a lot of this, of course, spawns around mental illness, that many of these individuals have severe mental problems and do not understand and are unwilling to understand the situation that they're living in. If they don't want the services, if they don't want to take the charity, which is exactly what it is, then what are you to do? And that's where this conversation, I think, for those on the political left falls apart, because they are constantly talking about how, well, we need to invest more money. And sure, investing more money can be a solution, but you can't bury your head in the sand. You can't completely ignore the fact that not every single person that is homeless wants to change their lifestyle. They're not interested in getting clean. They're not interested in getting off of alcohol. They're not interested in that. And if they're uninterested, you can invest a gazillion dollars into a solution. It's not going to solve the problem. And on the other side, the solution is not throwing these people in jail. Yet taking the homeless population and throwing them in prison is not the solution either. So we have to come to some sort of understanding that, yes, for the people that want help, we as a society should give them the opportunity and the option to change their lives. We should give them the ability to make a change if they want it. But for those that don't, for those that do want to walk around downtown Wilmington, drunk, high, shooting up in the middle of the street, harassing families, walking around naked, urinating and defecating in the streets, for those individuals that are not interested in the help and continue to want to wreak havoc, which is exactly what it is, on a community, those individuals need to be prosecuted criminally, because there's no other solution. The help is available, they don't want it, and they become a nuisance. They are breaking the law. And it's really as simple as that. So I'm not exactly sure what we're going to see in Washington, D.C. It's not immediately clear exactly what the president is going to do today. I will note that the District of Columbia does have the ability to be essentially taken over by the federal government. It is inherently a federal entity. It is not a state. It is not a municipality. It's the District of Columbia under the purview of the federal government. And so what I suspect that we're likely to see with this news conference around 10 o'clock this morning, which we'll run through its entirety tomorrow morning on the show, what I suspect you're going to see is President Trump directing the federal government to begin taking over the District of Columbia, taking over the streets and cleaning up the crime, cleaning up the homelessness. Because we know the D.C. mayor's not interested in doing it. It's a sanctuary city, after all. Right? You've got weak, useless Democrat leadership in the District of Columbia that's not interested in solving the problem. And it's not all that dissimilar from the discussion last week here in Wilmington. Oh, we need more money. We need more charity groups, we need more resources, we need more this, we need more that. As we know and as we've seen, you can only throw so much money at a problem to actually solve it. And this is unfortunately one of the situations that is a constant political hurdle for those on the left. They equate money with the solution to every problem. And you and I and the vast majority of other people can clearly understand and fully understand that it is not inherently always a money problem. I mean, like, you look at education as an example. That's always the same call there. Oh, well, to have better grades in public schools, we need more money. We need to pay our teachers more. Well, you can look at the charts. You can look at the data. You can look at the numbers. Money does not equal better test scores. Money does not equal a higher level of literacy in K through 12 education. It doesn't. No chart, no evidence, no stories back that up. It's all about the actual education piece of it. And so you can quadruple teacher pay. There is absolutely no evidence and nothing to back up the fact that all of a sudden that's going to make education better. But that's how Democrats go after problems, just more and more money. And it's an inherent difference between the right and the left on the role of government and the use of government. Where they believe that government is supposed to constantly be spending more and more and more and more. And as a result of that more spending, you get better results. And in some situations and in some issues, more money is actually the answer to the problem. But in many cases, it's not. You need to change the way that you operate. You need to change the way that things are done. And money does not equal a better outcome. And so, I mean, I feel very confident when I say the solution to homelessness here in Wilmington, the solution to out-of-control crime and homelessness in Washington, D.C., the solution is not more money. The solution is not more groups providing services. It's upholding and enforcing the laws that are on the books. We're not talking about changing the law. We're not talking about holding individuals who are homeless to a higher standard of the law. No, it's enforcing laws that are on the books because they already are. You're not allowed to shoot up heroin in the middle of the street. That's already illegal. You're not allowed to run around naked in downtown Wilmington. That's called public indecency. It's already illegal. You're not allowed to urinate and defecate in public. That's already illegal. So it's time to enforce those laws. It's time to enforce the regulations that are on the book. And I would suspect that that's what we'll hear from President Trump coming up a little bit later on today. So all eyes will be on that news conference. Looks like, yeah, that's happening at 10 o'clock this morning. I'll have a full rundown. We'll watch it together tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show as President Donald Trump will be making presumably a major announcement as it relates to the District of Columbia. Getting some commentary in on our Rumble live chat this morning saying DC homeless are militant and demand you give them what they ask for. I've been confronted by and followed by homeless for refusing to give them what they asked for. Clean it up, Mr. President. Yeah, I think it's hit a boiling point. From you've had a bunch of ridiculous crime. You've had members of Congress whose cars have been jacked in the middle of the street. I mean, it's absurd that that's what's going on in the District of Columbia. But it's very simple to understand when you look at who's in control. The police chief, Democrat. Mayor, Democrat. Those are the two calling the shots in D.C. And their unwillingness to deal with crime, their unwillingness to deal with violence, which is exactly what you see in all of these other blue states, New York, California, Washington, Oregon, the list goes on and on and on. When you're unwilling to deal with crime, when you allow it to fester because you want to be compassionate or so-called compassionate about something, and ends up turning into a complete and utter mess that runs out of control, that then somebody else has to step in and actually solve the problem. And I suspect that that's what we're going to see from the president later on today. So just a heads up on that. You'll hear likely from the media if the president talks about federalizing portions of D.C. and getting federal troops on the ground that he is a dictator. He is an authoritarian. He is, you know, he's Mussolini. He's Hitler. He's Mao. That'll likely be the commentary from those on the political left because they can't argue over the crime issue. Right? They can't say that D.C. is safe. They're not going to claim that the District of Columbia is a totally safe place to be. So like always, they will deflect from the conversation. They will completely ignore the issue at hand, and they'll call Donald Trump some sort of dictator. some sort of ruthless leader that is destroying our democracy, as if we haven't heard that line for the last decade. So we'll keep an eye on that out of Washington, D.C. Before we continue this morning, I do want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. For over 20 years, since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. So you know their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, ladies and gentlemen. They are located in downtown Wilmington. And just a free phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or online at their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. I used the Law Group at this point a little over 5 years ago, when I went through the process of purchasing a home and handling all of the legal side of that. It was a phenomenal experience. Reach out to them today, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. On the other side, there's always the joke, the meme, that Donald Trump could cure cancer, right? And nobody would give him credit for it. Well, something very similar to that unfolded this weekend on national television. We'll get into that, plus the meeting now set between President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. We'll look forward to that as well as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Monday morning, streaming live 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Good Monday morning to you. Hopefully you enjoyed what was all in all a pretty nice weekend across southeastern North Carolina. A little rain throughout the morning yesterday, but cleared up to be pretty nice. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, you can support the show over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Access to additional bonus content, including daily show notes and our monthly Patreon hangout. That'll be coming up here in just a couple of weeks. We get together on a Zoom call, typically lasts about an hour and a half, 2 hours, once a month, chat about the issues of the day. Last month, we talked about the Senate announcements from both Roy Cooper and Michael Whatley, discussions on that, and some other stuff going on in North Carolina and national politics. All of that available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Thanks to those members and the law group who allow us to do the program here each and every weekday morning. So the joke is that President Donald Trump could cure cancer and nobody would give him credit for it. And this comes back to the fact that the mainstream media in the United States refuses, and Democrats, for the most part, refuse to give Republicans in general, and more specifically, President Donald Trump, credit for anything that he does. I mean, it's across the board. Now, I will admit that when Joe Biden was in office and he did things that I agreed with, which there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of them, but when he did things that made sense to me, I gave the devil his due. For those that listened to me back on the radio here in Wilmington during the Wilmington Morning News morning show that I did for the better part of almost 3 years, when Joe Biden did things that made sense, that were smart, again, it wasn't a whole laundry list of issues, but when he did, I gave him credit. I'll call balls and strikes fairly. Yes, I'm a conservative. Yes, I disagree with the vast majority of policies and politics on the left. But when they're right on things, they're right on things. And I'm not ashamed. I'm not afraid. And I'm not shying away from giving those folks credit when it's due. But the left doesn't have that. Anything that Donald Trump does is the worst thing that's ever happened. Everything. No matter whether it's good for the United States or not, they believe that everything that this guy does is the worst thing that's ever happened. And it's become exhausting, if I'm being honest, for the vast majority of the American people. And I think it's why you saw the rise of Donald Trump in 2016 and why you saw him reelected last year, is this constant pearl clutching over everything that is done on the right is the worst thing that's ever happened. And everything is a threat to democracy and everything is the end of the world. They'll never give him credit. And to back up this point, Andrew Bolton, the scumbag that he is, was on ABC's This Week and was asked about President Donald Trump getting some credit for policy successes internationally, talking about, you know, the peace deals that have been made, talking about the strike on Iran that completely, no pun intended, nuked their nuclear program. And the question is, will somebody like Andrew Bolton, who we know is a deep state rat, will he give President Donald Trump credit for any of the actual foreign policy successes? As you can already guess the answer, let's take a listen.
You've been highly critical, obviously, of Trump's foreign policy generally and specifically on this case. Does he deserve some credit, though? He's had a string of what seemed to be legitimate foreign policy successes. You had the Azerbaijan-Armenia deal that was announced at the White House. He helped broker the agreement between Congo and Rwanda to stop the fighting there. He also helped to broker the agreement between Cambodia and Thailand. I mean, they're talking Nobel Peace Prize. I don't expect you to endorse the Nobel Peace Prize for Trump, but doesn't he deserve some credit for all of this?
Well, I don't think what he has done materially changes the situations in any of those circumstances or several others he's mentioned, like Pakistan, India, where the Indians, not just the government, the entire country, are outraged that he tried to take credit for that. In Thailand, Cambodia, he simply threatened tariffs. If they didn't sign a deal, they've signed a deal. Nothing has changed. And the real kicker in Azerbaijan, Armenia, was the Russians allowing Azerbaijan to take control of Nagorno-Karabakh in the past year. So I think what Trump has done is make it clear that he wants a Nobel Peace Prize more than anything else.
So the answer is no. So there you go. Just proving the point. No matter what Trump does, as you heard there from ABC News, give them credit when credit is due. They rattled off the list of peace deals and things that have been done under this administration over the last 6 months. And of course, as you would expect from deep state weasel Andrew Bolton, no. And having to put asterisks next to all of them. Oh, well, this one, you know, they signed the deal, but nothing has materially changed. But they signed the deal, right? Right, when you look at some of these conflicts, you look at some of these issues, they have come to the table and they have signed a deal. Now, if they choose to ignore that, if they choose not to play by the agreement, that's a different story. But these deals have been brokered under the watch of President Donald Trump. And folks, it's not very hard to understand. It's not very hard to wrap your head around. These deals come forward because you have somebody leading from a position of strength and power in the Oval Office. You don't have somebody who's running away with their tail between their legs, like you saw with the previous administration. You don't have the previous administration that is talking about, oh, it's just minor incursion here, minor incursion there, don't worry about it, not a big problem. You have a guy that says, frankly, get your shit together or there are going to be major consequences. I mean, that's the long and the short of a lot of the diplomatic policy that's coming out of the United States. President Donald Trump later this week is set to meet face to face in the United States of America with Russian President Vladimir Putin to try and bring an end to a 3+ year war that festered under Joe Biden and the same folks like Andrew Bolton, who, of course, are a warmongering neocon who love international conflict. Right? These guys love war. They love death and destruction. It is their number one pastime. They love it. Andrew Bolton is a warmongering neocon. He loves war. And so not only will he not give President Donald Trump credit for these successes, but he won't say it publicly, but he actively wants there to be more war because these guys all get rich off war. The whole military industrial complex, all these guys are getting filthy rich off of conflict. And so when people joke about the concept and the idea that Trump could literally cure cancer and they wouldn't give him credit, this is what we're talking about. He is set to meet face-to-face with Vladimir Putin in the span of just a couple of days. And even for that, they won't give him credit. I mean, I was watching CNN and MSNBC earlier this morning. I have them on in the office here. And all of that, all of the discussion there, we're not really sure what's going to happen with this meeting. Is this the wrong thing to do for the president? He shouldn't be meeting with Vladimir Putin. Yeah, because that's the foreign policy of the Democrat Party. These are the same folks that talk about how what's happening in Ukraine is terrible and it's a disaster and it's awful and people are getting killed and the bloodshed needs to stop. These are the same people. It needs to stop. Yet under their watch and their control, with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in the president and vice presidential offices during the entirety, the start and the ongoing of the Russian-Ukraine conflict, didn't do anything. Joe Biden did not even pick up the phone and call the Russian president. He never had a conversation with him. How the hell can you broker the end of a war? How the hell can you broker peace if you are unwilling to speak to one of the parties? Folks, you don't have to be you don't have to have your PhD in international conflict to understand this fact. That if you're not going to negotiate and bring both sides to the table, you're never going to get to peace. You don't have to spend $150,000 at an Ivy League school to figure that out. It's common sense. You've got to talk to both sides, even if you don't want to. The Democrats and the Biden administration were unwilling to speak to both sides. So instead, they funneled hundreds of billions of dollars into Ukraine with no plan in place to actually, quote unquote, win the war, to stop the war. And what you've seen in just the last 7 months, less than 7 months, is an administration that has already had Trump has had multiple phone calls with Putin. He has sent a foreign envoy to, I don't believe they've been in Russia, but they've met with Russian officials throughout portions of Europe. That has happened multiple times. And coming up later on this week, on Friday, the Russian president will be in person with Donald Trump in Alaska. According to a Truth Social post from the president Friday, he writes, quote, "The highly anticipated meeting between myself as the president of the United States of America and President Vladimir Putin of Russia will take place next Friday, August the 15th, in the great state of Alaska. Further details to follow." Once again, thank you for your attention to this matter. "The location of the meeting was a major point of interest after the summit was first floated following calls between Trump and Putin in the middle parts of last week, after a White House envoy, including Steve Witkoff, traveled to Moscow to meet with the Kremlin's chief. You had countries like Hungary, Switzerland, Italy, and the UAE all under consideration for the possible meeting place. However, ended up, after all was said and done, that this meeting will happen in the United States. This meeting will happen on U.S. territory in Alaska on Friday." Now, the question is, will Zelensky be there? The White House is toying with the idea of inviting Zelensky, at least according to some reports over the weekend. I'm not sure that he needs to be in the room. I mean, I'm still kind of reeling with the fact and struggling with the meeting that he had back in March here in the United States. If you'll remember that, he showed up at the White House, did his pomp and circumstance tour, sat down in the Oval Office with Trump and J.D. Vance, and made a complete and total jackass of himself, completely reframing the war in front of the American media, only to be slapped down and, I would argue, humiliated by Donald Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance. He was kicked out of the White House and told to get the hell out of the country, which is exactly what happened. He tried to get back in, said, "Oh, I'm sorry, let's have another meeting." And Trump and Vance said, "To hell with you, no, we're done." So, you know, what's going on here is you've got both sides of this conflict. You've got, of course, Zelensky in Ukraine, Russia and Putin. Both sides, I don't think, are actually willing to come to some sort of peace agreement. Russia is too prideful. The Russian president and Putin is too caught up into optics as to how it would look if, God forbid, they didn't fully completely take over Ukraine. As you can imagine, the Ukrainian president and Zelensky is not interested in completely falling and giving control of his territory over to Russia. So you have a huge divide in the two parties right off the bat. I just don't think I don't think there's any reason for Zelensky to be there. He is not in a place to negotiate. He has got a very small country under his watch. He has gotten rich with United States aid and resources over the last 3 years. Who really needs to come to the table is the Russian president. And while, yes, there have been phone calls, and Steve Witkoff, as I just noted, was in the Kremlin last week negotiating this deal. I suspect Trump and Putin together in the same room, Donald Trump doing what he does best, which is negotiating. Now, I know for the left, they hate him for that, but this guy is the art of the deal master. With those two being in person and Trump pushing heavily and you know, it's very different. We all deal with this all the time. When you're talking to somebody on the phone or even when you're sitting on a Zoom call with somebody, it's completely different than when you're in person with them. It's why you still see individuals travel across the country to meet with people. It's a completely different vibe. When you're actually in the same room with somebody, when you can read their body language, when you can shake their hand, it's just a completely different ballgame. Now, obviously, telecommunications have completely revolutionized how we work, and I think overall for the better. I'm not arguing that point. But when you're talking about negotiating a peace deal between two countries that have been at war for 3 years, where there's been an incredible amount of bloodshed and loss on both sides, getting in the same room, shaking hands, duking it out, having those real tough negotiations in person, which are completely different over the phone, it's a completely different ballgame. And so to me, Vladimir Putin and Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine are going to have to take whatever deal they get. They're not in a position to negotiate. They're just not. Now, should they give up territory? I don't think that's the answer either. But they're going to have to take whatever peace deal's in front of them. And if they don't want to take it, that's on them. But this deal needs to be brokered between the United States and Russia. We've seen Zelensky make a complete fool of himself multiple times, and I just don't think it's a good idea to have him in there. Now, Trump is threatening it. I'm sure he's doing that to try and put more pressure on Putin, who does not, and still to this point, has not been in the same room with Zelensky. There was rumors earlier this year that that was going to happen. It never materialized. There was a meeting in Brussels or somewhere, and both sides were there, and apparently Zelensky and Putin were both supposed to show up. Zelensky did, Putin bailed. So they haven't been in the same room together. And I just don't know that there's any benefit of the Ukrainian president to be there. Some commentary coming in on our Rumble live chat. If they allow Zelensky to attend, they will probably put him in a children's room while the adults get the deal done. And it's unfortunate that we're at that point, but I think we are. I don't, after what I saw in March, I don't trust Zelensky. And let me be clear. I don't trust Vladimir Putin either, but I don't trust Zelensky to show up at this meeting. I don't trust him to sit in the room and have a good faith negotiation. Now, will Putin do that? I don't know, but what we haven't seen is Putin do that publicly yet, and I think he's going to have a very hard time doing that with the president, because as we saw with Ukraine and as we will likely see in this meeting with Russia, if Putin tries going off and trying to explain and reframe this whole war, Trump is going to call his ass right out. He's not going to hold back. He's not going to allow the Russian president to reframe this conflict into something that it is not. The same way he called out Zelensky, if Putin tries pulling the same garbage, he's going to call him out as well. And so that'll be heading up. This will be coming up on Friday. Will there be an immediate deal after the meeting? Will they shake hands and come to some sort of agreement on the spot? My gut reaction says probably not, but I think there's a possibility. So that'll be coming up on Friday in Alaska, the time difference and change there. So it'll likely be happening in the probably late afternoon or evening hours here on the East Coast. And so we'll, as we get closer to that, as the week continues to progress forward, we'll keep a very close eye on said meeting with the Russian president and President Donald Trump. All of that heading our way coming up a little bit later on this week. We'll keep an eye on the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. We'll also, of course, be keeping an eye on the tropics and President Donald Trump's meeting or press conference today about the District of Columbia. All those details coming up for you tomorrow morning. Well, that's going to do it for a Monday edition. Thanks to the Law Group in Wilmington for their continued support. Give them a call, 910-251-6088. Or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Thanks for joining us live at 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We're back tomorrow morning right here with the Nick Craig Show.